This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 17th of March, 2023. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. Well, first of all, may I introduce our readers for this week. Heather Bryant.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
And Deborah Cranmer.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter for this week, Peter Lydiard. So we begin with our usual regular notices. And the first is to say, if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with a recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861229. That is 01962 861229, and this number can also be found on the key fob attached to your memory stick. Now, as you listen to the recording, remember you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen to them again. And those of you with computers or tablets, apart from using the memory stick in the box provided, you can load it into your own device. And you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, which is www.winchestertalkingnews.com. You just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, with the most recent first on the list. And so we start with our usual headline stories. The first is from Heather, which reads, Wife Murderer to be Released.
A Winchester man who murdered his wife and buried her body in woodland is preparing to walk free. Michael Gifford Hull, now aged around 60, strangled his wife Kirsty, 38, and buried her body in Mitchell Devil Woods in September 2005. He gave a TV appeal and pretended to break down while pleading for her to return to their detached home on Harestock Road. Finnish-born Kirsty's body was found by a dog walker a few days later, and Gifford Hull, who owned a trailer-making firm in Alsford, was charged with murder and stood trial at Winchester Crown Court in September 2006. He was found guilty by a majority verdict and jailed for life, being told he would not be eligible for parole before serving 15 years and 332 days, a date that was passed in late 2022. The parole board is recommending he be released. The exact date was unavailable. The Justice Secretary, Dominic Raab, can challenge the decision within 21 days, but it is unclear if he has done so. The Ministry of Justice has been asked to comment. Gifford Hull had denied murdering his wife, claiming her death was accidental. He claimed she attacked him with crutches after an argument over his use of prostitutes. Her body was hidden under a bed and then dropped out of a first floor window. He hid her in the garage, where her body was missed by police officers undertaking a search. He took her to Mitchell Devil Woods and buried her in a shallow grave. A dog walker found her remains on October the 6th, just days after her husband's TV appeal. Gifford Hull reported Kirsty missing and told police that following the row, Kirsty had left with her passport and a large sum of money. Winchester Crown Court was played footage of the press conference in which Gifford Hull made his emotional appeal. Jurors watched as Gifford Hull, 43, choked back tears and said, I would just like to say to Kirsty, please come back. The kids want you back. If anyone has seen her, please let us know where she is. There are two small children who are going frantic. He described to journalists how his wife of 19 years was a family, private person, and that he and their two children were always thinking that she might come back any minute. Gifford Hull said that he had been trying to get his son, then 9, and daughter, then 12, to lead as normal a life as possible, but said they want to know when she's coming back. A spokesperson for the parole board said, we can confirm that a panel of the parole board has directed the release of Michael Gifford Hull following an oral hearing in February 2023. Parole board decisions are solely focused on what risk a prisoner can present to the public if released, and whether that risk is manageable in the community. A panel will carefully examine a huge range of evidence, including details of the original crime and any evidence of behaviour change, as well as explore the harm done and impact the crime has had on the victims. Members read and digested hundreds of pages of evidence and reports in the lead-up to an oral hearing. Evidence from witnesses such as probation officers, psychiatrists and psychologists, officials supervising the offender and prisoner in prison, as well as victim personal statements, may be given at the hearing. It is standard for the prisoner and witnesses to be questioned at length during the hearing, which often lasts a full day or more. Parole reviews are undertaken thoroughly and with extreme care. Protecting the public is our number one priority.
Thank you. Right, Richard, your headline story is Final Warning for Water Provided After Disruption.
Regulators have issued Southern Water with a final warning over work that needs to be carried out to combat potential risks to household supplies. The Drinking Water Inspectorate, the DWI, has served the company with a final enforcement notice following delays affecting a £350 million project that is not due to finish until 2034. The scheme involves a raft of improvements to the water supply plant at Otterbourne. Last month, an issue at the works left at least 13,000 customers in Southampton and Winchester with little or no water for several days. Bottled water stations were set up at the Aegeus Bowl and several other locations to keep householders supplied. Southern Water said its system shut down after they detected that untreated water was not being filtered properly. The fault resulted in a lengthy clean-up operation. It followed previous water supply problem that affected thousands of customers across Southern Hampshire a few days before Christmas, sparking widespread anger. A Southern Water spokesman said, "A technical error affected our ability to source groundwater. The recovery process takes a number of days, so an emergency response team worked hard to make sure there was no impact to customers. We were able to cover the shortfall via alternative sources and procedures." North Battersley councillor Jeff Cooper has urged the government to strip Southern Water of its licence over the supply problems seen in December and February. In 2018, the DWI served the company with regulatory notices relating to several of its sites, including Otterbourne. A DWI spokesman said, "These sites were in need of improvement to mitigate potential problems to the water supply and to ensure the company continues to meet its regulatory duties in respect of the provision of a wholesome water supply. Due to delays, the inspector has taken further action by way of issuing a final enforcement order at Otterbourne." A Southern Water spokesperson added, "The project is replacing the major treatment processes on the site, while the site continues to supply drinking water. The project has experienced delays associated with the pandemic, a global shortage of key components, and supply chain issues resulting from the national shortage of material and labour. Failure to comply with a DWI enforcement notice can result in court action."
Thank you, Richard. Debbie, your piece says, "Sod turned for new doctor's surgery." Careful how you read this, please.
Indeed. Construction work has now begun for the new St Clement's GP surgery in Winchester. The building, delivered by Assura, is being built on the car park site on the corner of Friars Gate and Upper Brook Street, replacing the current St Clement's surgery on Tanner Street. The new development will include 15 consulting rooms, 3 treatment rooms, admin facilities and larger reception and waiting areas. A breaking ground event took place at the site of the new development on March the 13th. MP Steve Brine, actor Tommy Jessop, representatives from the practice, Winchester City Council and the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Integrated Care Board attended the event. Faye Johnson, practice manager, said, "This is a massive step forward and is great news for both the staff and the patients at St Clement's. Our current building is no longer fit for purpose, and the new development will really allow us to continue improving care for our patients."
Thank you, Deborah. My piece is headed Big Station Approach Plan Making Progress. Progress is a game being made on the potentially massive redevelopment of the station approach area in Winchester. Previous plans, which had included large office blocks, had been put into hibernation by legal challenges, councillor revolt, and the COVID pandemic. The City Council has been carrying out technical studies looking at the potential for redevelopment in the area between Newburgh Street, the Carfax site, Andover Road and Worthy Lane. That has involved talking to other landowners, including Network Rail and the Ministry of Defence, which owns the Cadet Force building on Newburgh Street. The Liberal Democrat-controlled City Council Cabinet Regeneration Committee heard that the council had also carried out a successful public consultation last autumn. More than 1,000 responses were received, with local people giving their views on what they want to see. Those views will influence the development brief, and should the council decide to proceed with the scheme. Senior Council Officer Emma Taylor, Head of Programme, told the committee, "The residents really want the station area to reflect the feel of the history of the rest of the city. It's the first impression and needs to be a welcoming gateway." Ms. Taylor said the feedback showed a clear preference for affordable housing. Tim Montague, chairman of the Oram's Arbour Residents Association, told the committee that the connection to the High Street should be improved, also revealing the County Council was consulting local people about making Sussex Street two-way. He questioned whether the city needed more offices, with many standing empty, including Cromwell House on Andover Road, which is to be included in any scheme. Ms. Taylor said the need for new offices was part of the work being undertaken. She said COVID had changed things, with more home working and the desire for a different type of office. Councillor Chris Westwood asked about Network Rail's stance, saying they may want to develop their own scheme, adding, "It has got to be a joint scheme to get the greater value of the whole." City Council leader Martin Todd said the authority was taking its time over the project. He told the committee, "There is a reason we are taking a careful approach to make sure that we have the right understanding at the start of the project, understanding the constraints, challenges and opinions of the public before we start defines what the priorities should be. It's also important that we don't look at the site on its own. As with all regeneration projects, we are looking at the benefits to the city and the wider district as a whole. The previous schemes were criticised for overdevelopment. A revolt of Tory councillors in 2016 scuppered the first scheme, and a second one, valued at £150 million, was given planning permission in 2019, but was withdrawn after a legal challenge in the High Court. Well, as usual, we now have the death notices. Cannings, Sylvia Cannings, peacefully, 25th February, aged 87.
Charrett, Maurice Keith Charrett, peacefully at Flowerdown Care Home, 5th of March, aged 91.
Coleman, Margaret Coleman, Mayor, peacefully on the 26th of February, aged 92.
Fulick, Leslie Fulick, passed away on the 2nd of March.
Howell, Greta Marguerite Howell, peacefully 26th of February, aged 87.
Olden, Sally Olden, passed away 23rd of February.
Scallard, Francis Scallard, née Payne, suddenly 14th of February, aged 96.
Slynn, Dr. Elizabeth Ann Slynn, peacefully at Winchester Hospice, 2nd of March, aged 69.
Stainer, Pamela Joy Stainer, née Cook, peacefully at Signature at Winchester on the 7th of March.
Right, we now have Christian comment from Deborah, please.
And this week it's written by Moira Redmond, and it's in memory of Liz Tatham Slynn. I'm taking over a share in this column in the saddest of circumstances. My friend, Liz Tatham Slynn, who wrote it for 7 years, died on March the 2nd after a short, cruel illness. You may remember that she wrote movingly about herself in her last column a few weeks ago. That was in the Chronicle on February the 16th. We were fellow parishioners at St. Peter's Catholic Church in Winchester and had known each other for 30 years. She touched many lives and will be much missed by her family and friends, by the wider community, and I know by the many people who read and appreciated her regular columns here. Anyone who knew her, or knew of her, will know that one of the most striking things about her was her Christian faith. It was so strong and so important to her, and she died very much held by the church she loved so much. But still, it is always hard to accept death. We want to know why, and sometimes there isn't a why. Christians don't have the answer to that question, but they have some guidance to help them through hard times. In the here and now, we can't always see the pattern of life, and sometimes the sorrow and the hardships can leave us feeling unconsoled. Christians have faith in God's plan, and they have hope of an afterlife and of God's forgiveness and mercy. And one more important thing to give us consolation, something we all have, whether Christian or not, St. Paul's first letter to the Corinthians, 13:13, contains one of the most famous lines in the New Testament. And now, faith, hope, and love abide, these three, and the greatest of these is love. We've heard them so many times at weddings and funerals, but still they hit home to us every time. There's a reason people remember them and want to hear them again. Paul has already told us that love is patient, love is kind, love does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud, it always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always preserves. Love never fails. Love is what is left. It stays with us. It survives those who have died. That is part of God's love for us and part of his plan. I recently came across this lovely prayer by Bede Jarrett, a Catholic friar and priest who lived from 1881 to 1934. Love is eternal. Love is more immortal. Death is only a horizon, and a horizon is nothing save the limit of our sight. It's a convincing and comforting thought. There's always sadness at funerals, but at the same time, we try to make them a celebration of life, remembering the dead person with love and joy. We mourn them, we miss them, but we ask God's help to balance our feelings, and we ask him to look after our dead friend, to call them home. We remember them with love, and isn't it how we'd all like to be remembered? In memory of Liz Tatham Slynn, R.I.P., much loved by many.
Thank you, Deborah. Well, we now have letters to the editors, a fairly mixed bag of letters this week. Heather, would you like to start us with the first letter?
Yes, this is from Edward Phillips, Questions for MP. The Hancock leaks have made dispiriting reading and raised questions about the conduct of our local MP. No Member of Parliament of whatever political persuasion should use their position to obtain government contracts for financial gain. This conflict of interest is especially important when an MP is a member of a ruling party where the ministers concerned are colleagues and even friends. The Hancock leaks reveal the persistence of Mr. Bryan's efforts to secure a government contract for Remedium after he had been taken on to their payroll. He has since been elected chair of the Health Committee, which oversees the probity of NHS contracts of the type he was attempting to obtain. Clearly, he should resign as chair. It would be helpful to his constituents if Mr. Bryan were to explain his conduct in his next letter from Westminster. Edward Phillips, Berwick Way, Week.
Thank you, Richard.
On a similar theme, Richard Eve writes a letter called Lobby Leaks. It's a matter of record that Steve Bryan was paid £1,600 a month by Remedium. We now read in the recently leaked WhatsApp messages that he was lobbying the head of the NHS in order to secure business for Remedium, and then complained to the Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, that after trying for months, he was not having any success. As a former health minister, Mr. Bryan was explicitly advised in writing by the Advisory Committee on Business Appointment that, for 2 years from your last day in ministerial office, you should not become personally involved in lobbying the UK government or NHS organisations on behalf of Remedium partners. It's not clear which bit of this he failed to understand. None of his constituents should now be left in any doubt who Mr. Bryan represents in Parliament. Richard Eve, Oxford Road, Winchester.
Thank you, Richard. Deborah?
This letter is written by Jill Sindel and it's entitled Police Pledge. Hampshire's new Chief Constable of Police knows that people want to feel safe. This means relentlessly pursuing those who commit crime and bring harm and misery to communities. That was from the Chronicle of March the 2nd. This news will offer hope to businessman Murat Neguzel, whose premises in King's Walk have been attacked several times over the past year by teenage vandals without police action. Let's hope Scott Chilton is as good as his word. Jill Sindel, The Woodlands, Kingsworthy.
Right, I have another letter on the same subject. This is written by Jessica Gottlieb. It's headed Rise in Racism. After hearing about how Winchester Tailoring in King's Walk was vandalised and how the owner, Murat Neguzel, was verbally abused with racial slurs, I am more than just disappointed in Winchester. Chronicled March the 2nd. This has not been the only case of racism to happen in the city, and I fear that it's on the increase. Winchester is supposed to be an educated city, but it's evident that the ignorance of a lot of people is still afloat. Last year, Prince Charles unveiled a statue of medieval Jewish moneylender Licorice outside the Ark, a monument to commemorate the importance of her and the Jewish history of Jewry Street. But even across the road in the cabinet rooms, the owners have overheard and had to deal with anti-Semitic comments made by customers. And recently I had to face it myself. I was having lunch by myself in Bento when nearby, within a group of 20-ish year olds, I could overhear two boys discussing their own racial prejudices while expressing their views on specific Jewish stereotypes. As a Jewish resident of Winchester, I then had to take on the responsibility of politely confronting them, having them agree with me that I don't depict the stereotype that they were describing, and having to explain to them that their outwardly expressed views in their beliefs in stereotypes is anti-Semitic, and having to explain to them that their conversation was not acceptable. There is so much anti-Semitism and Jewish hatred in the world, and I don't want to be out for a nice lunch feeling uncomfortable in my own hometown where I consider it to be safe. Anti-Semitism is a form of racism, and any form of racism is not okay. I love to learn about different cultures and backgrounds, but the lack of respect for diversity in other communities in Winchester is really disgusting. And this city should know better and do better. If you witness any form of discrimination, call it out and try to educate the ignorant. That was written by Jessica Gottlieb, Staple Gardens, Winchester. Heather, please.
This is from Gemma Larkham, headed Lovely Gesture. A huge thank you to Victoria in Charles, sorry I don't know your surname, who rescued me from Winchester train station recently when our train to London was cancelled and drove me to Basingstoke to get another one. What thoroughly kind strangers. Victoria, I hope you made it to your daughter's house in time so she could go to tennis. Thanks a million. You are really lovely people, and your gesture was very much appreciated. Gemma Larkham, Berwick Road, Week.
Thank you, Heather. Richard.
KJ Barrett writes about good times. Your article, Chronicle, March the 2nd, recalled the halcyon days of the Talbot Hotel that stood on the High Street until the 1970s and reawakened many memories. The good times I spent at the bar, the people I met, and, of course, the legendary jukebox. Some time ago, inspired by memories of the old hostelry, I penned the following poem. The Talbot Hotel Revisited. On the wall hangs a framed black-and-white photograph. I recognise the old faces, barroom poets and philosophers, high on weed, envisaging nothing. The emptier beer bottles, bled like corpses, stoned wasted days, listening to the same songs over and over. I read a poem from a scrap of paper, the one about the cops and the flashing blue lights at midnight. The record playing on the turntable takes me back to that time. Everything in the photograph remains the same, and in the white room where estate agents sell old world charm, and ghosts of the living meet the dead, they fill a vase with flowers. KJ Barrett, Stuart Crescent, Stanmore.
Thank you, Richard. Deborah.
Yes, this letter is from Christina Suddens, who's head of marketing at the Cathedral. The recent letters to the Hampshire Chronicle on concerts. The Cathedral, as it recovers from the impact of COVID, is seeking a financially sustainable future, whilst continuing to serve well its multiple communities. The pattern of the Cathedral's hospitality to and engagement with outside groups has been one area for careful reconsideration following the opportunities and challenges posed by COVID. It is vital that we achieve a balance between the needs of visitors and established user groups and worshippers while developing new activities, audiences and partnerships to broaden our public reach and benefit. The Cathedral must secure additional revenue streams and maximise others. It also needs to focus some staff resources on fresh areas of development. This is why some activities have been reformed, such as the lunchtime concert series, which now showcases the gifts of local young people. It's also why the Saturday concerts continue but will be less frequent, to allow Saturdays, especially in the summer months, to be a day for unhindered visiting, and later for preparation for Sunday worship. Whether you're one of our cherished relationships or an inquirer, we would like to listen to you and explore how our partnership might grow. We will be trying to set your request into a bigger picture of competing demands and interests, and to do this, holding to the Cathedral's values of kindness, openness and excellence. Christina Suddens, Head of Marketing and Communications, Winchester Cathedral Enterprises Limited, The Close, Winchester.
Thank you, Deborah. My letter is written by Dr. Michael Bennett and it's headed Air Grievance. I was not surprised when reading Councillor Sue Cook's list of complaints about the new leisure centre, Chronicle February 23rd, which she described as shambolic. I am sure that a shortage of staff may explain many of these failings, but other problems at the centre are predictable and have different causes. When the Winchester Fitness and Sports Club, for over 50s, was based at River Park, we used 8 badminton courts to play various racket sports. On being consulted over the new leisure centre, we advised that 8 courts was insufficient given a growing demand. But this advice was ignored, and only 8 badminton courts were created in the new main hall. This is insufficient, and is worse in school holidays when half of the main hall caters for children's activities. For me, the greatest problem is the ventilation in the main hall area. This has been raised on several occasions, including at a city council subcommittee I attended. There is either no ventilation, or so little as not to be noticed. The hall is unbearable in summer, particularly when the sun streams in through the enormous glass wall. The lack of air is very unpleasant, but also presents health issues to people of all ages. I and others have walked out when these conditions are severe. The City Council has spent £43 million of our money on this building. It has been open for nearly 2 years, yet nothing seems to have been done to remedy the ventilation problems around the main hall. If I paid a company to build an extension to my own house and there were defects, I would insist that the company remedied or paid compensation. I cannot understand why the City Council, with access to legal advice, seems to be doing nothing about this serious defect. It is written by Dr. Michael Bennett, Fordington Road, Full Flood. Heather, please.
This letter is from Marvin Naylor. Heartfelt thanks to city folk. At the risk of blowing my own trumpet, or guitar, rather, I'd like to take a moment during this hopefully brief period of inactivity due to inhospitable weather conditions, cold and snow, to express my sincere and very heartfelt thanks to all the people of Winchester who have come up and spurred me on with their kind compliments over the recent months. In particular, the shy young female student who, without a word, put a card in my case thanking me for your lovely music which has blessed my ears for the past 4 years that I've lived in this city. The old lady who thanked me for bringing joy to us all, though not all, I'm sure. And the clearly well-off woman who donated something I'd never seen before, a £50 note.
Wow.
Sometimes it's all about being in the right place at the right time and playing the right song. In this case, Here Comes the Sun, her favourite. All this is very cheery, particularly when things aren't going well, as when the coinage is mostly shrapnel. That's 1, 2, and 5p coins in busker jargon. Or even zilch after half an hour's effort. And as the old lady added, you do come in for some flack sometimes. Once again, on behalf of all of us who ply our trade out on the street, my deepest thanks and appreciation. Martin B. Naylor, Greenhill Road, Full Flood.
Thank you, Heather. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That is 01962 860836. Or you can email them on news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you could write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And you could even drop in when you're next in Winchester Town Centre. Well, we next have editorial comment, which Richard is going to read. Richard.
Yes, and the Chronicle is celebrating a welcome progress on so many fronts. The Hampshire Chronicle can seldom have reported in recent years such progress on so many public projects in one issue. Look through these pages and you will see work starting on the new St Clement's GP surgery on Upper Brook Street, King's Walk to have the £380,000 meanwhile revamp before it's swept away at some future point in the new Silver Hill scheme, an archaeology project will follow the demolition of the redundant Friars Gate surgery, building work is starting on 6 council houses at Southbrook Cottages in Mitchell Deber. Public consultation has been extended in the Church Commissioner's plans for part of Bushfield Camp, and most significantly, station approach is lumbering back into life, hopefully, ultimately, with a less gargantuan and more human scheme. This is welcome news that the crippling icy paralysis of recent years in Winchester is finally melting away. Cities need to grow, else they decline. Winchester has always grown, or shrunk. It's never stayed still. These stories show there is life yet in this city.
Thank you, Richard. Well, I've got the opinion piece written this week by George Hayter, and it's headed Memories of TV Disasters. As a graphics assistant at the BBC in the 1980s, one of my assignments was a rugby league final at Wembley Station. My modest role was to produce team lists, name captions and other info to be imposed over the TV pictures. I turned up early and managed to find the graphics generator set up in a dingy storage area under the crowd seating and far from the production team. Well, for this programme, there was no assistant producer to help me. I was not absolutely confident about how to score rugby league, so I thought I'd better mention this to the producer. I hoped he might be able to delegate somebody to give me a quick rundown on points awarded for tries, conversions, etc. I could hear the producer going through on my headphones. He was in the mobile control room parked by the stadium. He sounded awfully busy telling the camera crew what shots he wanted, so I hesitated to press the button on my microphone to interrupt. A pause in his earnest instructions never came, and now it wasn't long till the match would start. I consulted nearby BBC engineers, but they were fretting over their own problems, and anyway, they knew nothing about rugby. Oh, well, I played rugby at school, and we always got 3 points for a try and 2 for a conversion. Rugby league's probably the same, I thought. A try was scored. I typed in 3-0 scoreline, which the producer duly superimposed over the live coverage. It was being broadcast as far away as Australia. "The caption's wrong," someone in the control room shouted, and the producer howled like a wounded dog as if to say, "Someone's ruined my programme!" Oh, I still have dreams about mistakes I made at the BBC. Writing about them here might make conscientious readers more relaxed about embarrassing mistakes that they've made. I was working on the 6 o'clock news when the Thatcher government was battling the miners' union. I accidentally put on an extra naught on a graphic showing the numbers of miners who had returned to work that day, giving the impression that the strike was collapsing. Fortunately, the newsreader's voice did convey the correct number. One of my graphic design colleagues was once summoned old material from an unrelated programme by mistake, leading to one man and his dog appearing over a footage of Winston Churchill and his wife. Another colleague, let's just call him Tomkins, prepared a caption for a Top of the Pops appearance by Grace Jones singing "Pull Up to the Bumper," which accidentally read "Pull Up to the Bummer." It wasn't a hit. When Tomkins was assigned to This Is the Day religious broadcast from a private home, his personal transport arrangements undermined the climax of the show. The prayer which ended the live programme was interrupted by a knock at the front door and a voice saying, "Taxi for Tomkins!" Although mistakes by 1980s BBC graphics operators were rare, a typing error by Tomkins briefly became famous. He was working on the last night of the proms at the Albert Hall, where his responsibilities included typing subtitles for the national anthem. Instead of "God Save the Queen," he put "God Save the Queen." Next day, The Guardian made the slip into a front-page story with a cartoon. The Radio 4 satirical programme Weekending included a sketch with the DG humming along to "God Save the Queen" and shouting at Tomkins. The audience was in stitches. My worst disaster came when I was working in New Zealand. Onto a big screen behind a much-respected TV New Zealand weather forecaster, I had to project the weather maps. Well, instead of weather maps made for that evening's forecast, I accidentally projected obsolete weather maps that had been made for the previous evening's forecast. Thanks to me, confronted by yesterday's maps, the unfortunate forecaster was forced to give the viewers yesterday's forecast. Right, we now move on to the letter from Westminster, which Heather is going to read, please.
I recently led an important debate on the future of electric vehicles in the House of Commons, a subject I know will be of interest to many readers of the Hampshire Chronicle. The government has committed to phasing out the sale of new petrol and diesel cars by 2030 and wants all new cars and vans to be zero emission by 2035. So I pose the question, are we ready and are we on track to meet this target? The debate arose in response to current concerns expressed to me by constituents and local motor retailers surrounding the cost and availability of new electric vehicles, as well as the infrastructure for charging them, as I highlighted concerns surrounding a target of 300,000 EV charge points by 2030 and widespread disparities in the geographical distribution of them across the country. Winchester is in the top 100 in the UK in terms of charge points per population, but I wanted answers from the Minister Hugh Merriman, MP, as to how the government will meet its own ambitious target. And I called for further government grants to be made available following the closure of the plug-in car grant scheme last year, which saw a big spike in the number of new EVs sold. A large focus in the debate was on the worldwide shortage in supply of available vehicles and the almost complete absence, for understandable reasons, of a second-hand market in them at the current time. I pointed out that the average waiting time currently was 7 months, with many manufacturers asking customers placing an order for a new EV to wait upwards of 10 months. And I highlighted the high upfront cost of electric vehicles, which I said acted as a serious deterrent to people making the switch without significant spare resources in their household budget. My sense is many people want to do the right thing and make the switch, but the economics do not stack up right now. And that's even if you can source a new electric vehicle, given the worldwide supply issues. So while I and many of my constituents back the phasing out of combustion cars as a move to support the commitment to being net zero by 2050, there remain to my mind legitimate concerns that the 2035 target is attainable. In reply, the Minister said, "The government are committed to decarbonising transport and to phasing out the sale of new petrol and diesel cars and vans by 2030, becoming the first G7 country to do so. The benefits of zero emission motoring are there to be won: improved air quality in our towns and cities, economic growth through our automotive industry, and ultimately cheaper and cleaner driving for all. Getting to that point will require government and industry to furnish this country with an accessible, affordable and secure charging infrastructure network." To be fair, he acknowledged there was a lot to do, but said there are reasons to be cheerful. I hope my debate focused on some of them, while shining a light on some of the very real challenges we have to make change. And it is a change that is needed, given transport is the largest carbon-emitting sector in the UK, making up 27% of total greenhouse emissions, with 91% of them stemming from vehicles. You can review, watch back at the whole debate at stevebryan.com Green Winchester. Finally, this month's column goes to print before it was possible to include my substantive details of Wednesday's budget, but you can find an initial response from me on www.fb.com/Steve Bryan MP and more on my website thereafter. Steve Bryan MP Winchester and Chandler's Ford.
Thank you, Heather. Now, a few things that you might find of interest in happening in your area over the next week or so. Friday the 24th, there's Vivaldi's The Four Seasons, that is in Winchester Cathedral. Tuesday the 28th, the Wessex Dance Academy are at the Theatre Royal, Winchester. And on Sunday the 2nd of April, once again at the Theatre Royal, there is Showstopper, the improvised musical. And Deborah, I think you have a piece about what's on,
yes,
please.
Yes, I have. Catch the award-winning musical improvisers, the Showstoppers, in their riotous kids show in April. The Showstoppers kids show takes kids' ideas and turns them into marvellous musical adventurers from scratch, right away, and in front of their very noses. The audiences will explore magical kingdoms as the kids decide where the story is set, what happens next, and who the characters are. They can even join the Showstoppers on stage if they want to. An important part of the show is that the children, and only the children, are in charge here. Adults will have to take a back seat. Kids get to decide who the heroes are and what happens next in every story. All they'll need to do is to shout out their ideas, and the Showstoppers will bring them to life with music and comedy right there on the spot. The group is well known and renowned for its improvisation work. Most cast members have also received acclaim in their own right. The Showstoppers have been working on Showstopper the Improvised Musical since 2008, figuring out how to improvise in increasingly esoteric styles, musical, dance, straight theatre and film genre, to name but a few. The show had an 8-week run at London's Other Place in early 2019 and played monthly at the Lyric Theatre in London's West End throughout 2022. The Showstoppers Kids Show will be at the Theatre Royal Winchester on Sunday, April the 2nd, starting at 2:30 p.m.
Thank you, Deborah. Well, finally, before we go on to items of general news, let's have a look at the lighting up times for the coming week. The sun, if there is any, will rise at about 6:15 a.m. and set again at around 6:15 p.m. Well, now we go on to items of general news, and Heather, could we have the first article, please?
This item is Horse Gets Fireman's Lift. Firefighters recently rescued a large Arab horse which had fallen in its stables in Denmead. The horse was found on March the 10th on its side and was unable to get up. Crews from three stations arrived to lift it up with a specialist hoist. A Hampshire Fire Service spokesman said, "Our animal rescue teams and fire crews were called to rescue a large horse who had fallen inside the stables on Sheepwash Lane in Denmead on Friday morning. The Arab mare had fallen, was laid out on her side, and was unable to get up. Firefighters from Cosham, Winchester and Overton were on the scene shortly before 10 a.m. A local vet sedated the animal before crews formulated a plan to lift the 15-hands-high horse using a Manitou vehicle. The 31-year-old animal was successfully lifted and left with the vet and owner."
Thank you, Heather. Richard, please.
Calls for under fire MP to step down. Winchester MP Steve Brine is being urged to step down from chairing a government committee after leaked text messages exchanged with Matt Hancock suggested he lobbied the head of the NHS on behalf of a recruitment firm. Steve Brine said in a text that he'd been trying for months to get the health service to hire anaesthetists through the company Remedium, for whom Mr. Brine does work. The WhatsApp messages are just some of around 100,000 linked to former Health Secretary Hancock, which were recently leaked. Lib Dem health spokesperson Daisy Cooper said, "Steve Brine should immediately step down from the Health Select Committee to allow an independent investigation to take place. He cannot be in post whilst these allegations hang over his head." These messages suggest Steve Brine was desperate to help his corporate employers whilst the country was pulling together during a pandemic, and leave Mr. Brine with serious questions to answer. Frankly, the whole thing stinks. Rishi Sunak should launch an independent investigation into this damning evidence immediately. On Twitter, Tony Diver, acting political editor of the Sunday Telegraph, said, Steve Brine told Michael Gove in February 2021 that he'd been trying for months to get work for his employer. At the time, Remedium, a recruitment consultancy, had been paying Brine as a strategic advisor at a rate of £200 an hour. But he was frustrated the NHS had not used its services to hire anaesthetists, telling Gove, how might I progress this, or does the NHS just not need the help? Brian could have broken two sets of lobbying rules, the Cabinet Office business appointment rules and the MP's code of conduct. He was told specifically by the ACOBA, the Cabinet Office business appointment rules, that he should not use government and or Whitehall contacts to secure business on behalf of Remedium partners. It was previously reported that Brine lobbied Hancock for Remedium when he was paid on an ad hoc basis, but the messages reveal it continues while he was being paid monthly. The Code of Conduct says MPs cannot lobby for the benefit of a firm within 6 months of being paid. In a statement, Mr. Brine said, this was about responding in the national interest to an urgent public call from ministers and the NHS in a national crisis, even if ultimately, it led nowhere and did not secure any business for Remedium.
Thank you, Richard. Deborah?
Damp home took a year to sort out. A Winchester woman is set to move back into a house more than 1 year after being moved up due to damp problems. Sarah Cragg was moved from an A2 Dominium property in Parchment Street to a flat in the valley, Stanmore, in February last year. At that time, she was told that she would be able to move back to Parchment Street in August. When this didn't happen, the Housing Association admitted that the work had taken longer than expected and reassured her that she would be given regular updates. Now she's been told that she should be able to move back in April. The Winchester Radio volunteer said, I feel that for a social housing association, A2 Dominion is shocking. I want to see that all those who work for them and earn enough money for their own property should have a go at being tenants for at least a year, and then they would soon find out just how terrible the service is. They wouldn't accept it, so why should we? Last year, she described the impact the situation had had on her health. She said, this situation has forced me to reduce my work hours, and now I'm in a state of limbo and don't know how to move forward. I'm a good tenant, never been in arrears, and have always tried to do the right thing. I'm just so fed up and tired with this situation. The rent on Ms. Cragg's property has also increased by nearly £1,000 recently, going from £5,833 to £6,717 per year. She said, that's a lot of money. My wages with the NHS do not reflect. And to add insult to injury, most of that money is for maintenance fees. Dawn Whiteman, Director of Homes and Communities at A2 Dominion, said, we would like to apologise to Ms Cragg for the time it's taken to repair her property and for any inconvenience caused. We take damp very seriously, and it was important that we carried out a thorough investigation to ensure the problems fully resolved. Repairs are now complete, and a post-work inspection has been scheduled. We remain in close contact with Ms Cragg about moving back in. Unfortunately, we have had to communicate to our customers that there will be rent increases that are in line with the cap set by the government, while remaining below the level of inflation. The rising cost of electricity, gas and materials has meant service charges will also increase. This tough decision ensures services and repairs to shared areas and outside spaces can be maintained to the highest standard. We are working closely with all our customers and providing advice and support to those in need.
Thank you, Deborah. My piece is headed Decision Day for Major Solar Farm. Proposals for a major solar farm in the Meon Valley are set to be decided by city council planners. Developer Intelligent Alternatives applied for an 18 megawatt solar farm at Locks Farm, Botley Road, near Bishop's Waltham. It is estimated that the farm will provide renewable energy to power 5,500 homes for 1 year, with an estimated 53,333 panels. The scheme was due to be decided by Winchester City Council Planners Committee on Wednesday the 15th of March, as the Chronicle went to press. Bishop's Waltham Parish Council originally objected to the proposal, but after the developers' consultation they decided to support it. The environment campaign group Winchester Action on Climate Change, WINACC, also supports the solar farm, as well as 45 letters from members of the public. Bill Gunyon of WINACC's Renewable Energy Action Group said, "We hear different solutions to the energy crisis every day. The one constituent element is the need for an immediate and exponential increase in solar power. In particular, the new British Energy Security Strategy envisages that the contribution of solar must increase fivefold by 2035. Bishop's Waltham Museum, Bishop's Waltham Society, CPRE Hampshire, Solar Campaign Alliance and Shedfield Parish Council object to it. A total of 67 public objects were also received." Tony Kippenberger, chairman of Bishop's Waltham Society, said, "It is the right idea in a totally wrong place. Despite Winchester City Council's declaration of climate emergency, how and where this should be tacked, I think it means tackled, remain important questions. There is a housing shortage, but that doesn't mean that houses should be built without regard to location and consequences. The same applies to locating renewable energy resources." Landowner of Locks Farm, Richard Lee, explained why the solar farm was needed. He said, "We gave up the dairy part of our farming business that has been in our family for three successive generations. This was an extremely tough decision. However, perhaps more than any other business, farming has been subjected to the very real effects of climate change. We therefore decided that in order to keep the land as healthy farmland for future generations and to continue to farm as a viable business, allowing solar on part of the farm would enable us to carry this out." Heather, please.
This item is headed Hubs Snubbed as BT Street Displays Rejected. Controversial plans for BT Street Hubs have been refused by City Council planners. The telecoms giant had applied for five hubs across Winchester city centre, which would have replaced the more traditional phone boxes. However, the plans faced significant opposition from residents and businesses. Local campaigner George Prest welcomed the decision. He said, "This is a victory for common sense, and we welcome the decision wholeheartedly. Those screens had no place in our historic high street, and their refusal represents a preservation of everything we hold dear." A petition attracted more than 210 signatures. Mr. Press said, "We gathered local voices based on the fact that the screens were ugly, intrusive, and redundant in an age of smartphones. The last thing Winchester needs is a series of digital advertising monoliths getting in the way of city life. Thank you to everyone who signed the petition." The five hubs each received between 55 and 79 objecting comments, with none in support. In the planning officer's report, it said, "Winchester is a compact city with medieval street patterns. The proposed location of this hub is located in a busy junction of the High Street, Drury Street, St George's Street, with very high levels of pedestrian footfall. The streets provide movement and place, with Winchester holding a street market through the week, narrowing the available space, funneling pedestrians considerably in the area proposed for the street hub. Winchester hosts a Christmas market and other events through the year, which sees hundreds and thousands of extra visitors in an already very busy town centre, thereby increasing pedestrian congestion. The local planning authority has identified significant harm to public safety with the installation of a street hub in this location, by adding extra street clutter and obstacles to pedestrian and cycle movement. The five BT hubs will be experienced by the tourist or user of the centre of Winchester as they span from the bottom of the High Street to the top. It is not considered that the public benefit or the aims to improve digital communications outweigh the harm identified in this respect, especially in such a significant heritage environment. BT has been asked for a comment.
Thank you, Heather. Richard?
Shameful and spiteful. Damning council report. Denmead Parish Council has been hauled over the coals in a damning report looking into significant disharmony and malfunction. The report has laid bare behaviour described as demoralising, insulting, humiliating, patronising, shameful, spiteful, and soul-destroying for all those involved. In an unusual step, Winchester City Council, which includes Denmead Parish Council's patch within its boundaries, is monitoring the council and will continue to make sure it does not relapse into infighting. A report written by the City Council's monitoring officer, Sharon Evans, which has been discussed by Winchester's Audit and Governance Committee, revealed damning findings. Ms. Evans said there was true concern felt towards Denmead as relationships had broken down. She added intervention was taken and this investigation was commissioned to help us find a way forward. City Council documents state that no one involved with Denmead can consider themselves beyond reproach in the context of the complaints. It adds that the complaints are a symptom of bigger issues and problems at Denmead, and that code of conduct is a blunt tool to address issues that are often cultural. Of the 12 complaints made against Denmead councillors, 5 were upheld for being in breach of the code of conduct. A Winchester Council spokesman said that the complaints were made by councillors and the code found to be breached related to behaviour. Formal letters of grievances shared with the Local Democracy Reporting Service exposed accounts of a parish councillor demoralising, insulting, humiliating and patronising members of the public and councillors on a regular basis. The treatment of a member of the public by the councillor during a meeting was described as shameful, spiteful and soul-destroying for all those involved. In another letter of grievance, the complainant stated that they endured a personal and vicious attack from many councillors during an exempt meeting. The report concluded by saying that the Denmead residents have not been served well by the parish council in recent times. A Denmead Parish Council spokesperson said the parish council has been liaising with Winchester since autumn 2020 regarding code of conduct matters, adding, none of these breaches involve the chairman or vice chairman or any chairman of the committees. Further to an interim report being issued, we have therefore, through proper council processes, instigated a rolling review programme so that all policies are reviewed on a rotational basis and a programme of training for both employees and councillors is in place.
Thank you, Richard. Deborah.
Yes, this article is entitled Sharp Decline in Fly Tipping. The number of fly tipping incidents in the region has fallen, new figures have revealed. In the wake of government findings, a rural insurance specialist is calling on landowners to double down on their efforts to keep environmental criminals at bay in a bid to maintain the positive trend. According to the Department for the Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, DEFRA, a total of 102,916 fly tipping incidents were recorded across the region in 2021-2. and this was down by about 18,367 on the previous year. In Winchester, there were 1,732 incidents in 2021-22, compared with about 388 fewer the previous year. And picture is very similar in East Hampshire and the Test Valley. Amanda Harmon of Roar Insurance Broker, Lycett, said, "The figures are very encouraging, but it is important that landowners continue to remain vigilant if the downward trajectory is to continue. Making it difficult for environmental criminals to access land is one of the most effective preventative measures you can take. Gates should be locked when not in use. Fences should be in a good state of repair, and hedges should be cut back to allow good visibility for property owners. Fly-tippers tend to operate under the cover of darkness, so exterior lighting should be installed if possible. Security cameras can also be an effective deterrent and can help secure successful prosecutions. As well as posing significant and environmental health risks, fly-tipping can be a legal and financial burden. While local authorities will pay the clean-up costs of clearing waste from public land, farmers and other landowners have responsibility for cleaning and removing waste from private land. With 864 incidents of agricultural fly-tipping in the region, and with clean-up costs averaging £1,000 and large-scale incidents costing £10,000, it can be an expensive business. Failure to comply can result in prosecution. Harmon advised a combined farm insurance policy which covers clean-up costs, typically capped between £10,000 and £15,000 for the insurance period.
Thank you, Deborah. My piece is called Fire Call Outs Double. I think that's Fire Call Outs Double. Hampshire firefighters attended thousands of fires during last summer's heatwave, figures show. The service was called to 2,076 fires in the third quarter of 2022 across July, August and September. This period coincides with the heatwave, which the Met Office has since revealed was the joint hottest summer on record in England. The figures show the number of fires was more than double those in the same period the previous year, when firefighters were called to 982 fires. Of the 2,076 fires in Hampshire last year, 789 of them were so-called primary fires. These are fires which occur in a non-derelict building, vehicle or outdoor structure, or involved a fatality, casualty or rescue, or were attended by five or more pumping appliances. This was a 43% increase on the same period in 2021, when there were 553 primary fires. There were also 1,280 secondary fires, generally small outdoor fires not involving people or property, almost treble the number in summer 2021, when there were only 429. Jason Avery, Fire Service Area Manager, says, "It was an exceptionally busy time for all our teams. We are immensely proud of the commitment, dedication and professionalism that they showed, and the part they played in protecting our communities. Despite a very high number of challenging and demanding incidents, we were able to respond to every incident that we were called to." Heather, please.
This article is headed "New 64-bedroom care home opens its doors." The Mayor of Winchester formally opened a new luxury care home in Compton. Barchester Healthcare's newest facility, Shawford Springs, was pronounced open on Thursday, March the 2nd. The event, hosted by Commercial Director Simon McCall and General Manager Julie House, saw guests explore the care home in Otterbourne Road, which is welcoming its first residents. Speaking at the grand opening, the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Angela Clear, said, "I am delighted to be here to open Shawford Springs Care Home. It is very good to see Barchester investing with such confidence in the future of care in the county. That investment will ensure not only top quality facilities and world-class care, but also jobs, training, and a boost to the local community. It is clear from everyone I have met today how dedicated the Barchester teams are to the people that they care for, and it's reassuring to know that the people of Otterbourne and beyond will receive a warm welcome at Shawford Springs, and that their needs will be met with respect and dignity. Barchester runs more than 200 care homes across the UK and strives to put residents' choice at the core of what they do, whether it's dining, hospitality or enrichment programmes. Shawford Springs will provide residential, respite and dementia care with 64 bedrooms across three floors, as well as accessible kitchen and garden areas for residents to engage in everyday activities. General Manager Julie House said, "We are delighted our new home is open. Our residents are at the heart of everything we do at Shawford Springs, and we look forward to welcoming them and their families, becoming an intrinsic part of the local community and delivering seamless, personalised care in partnership with other local organisations. We take pride in really getting to know each of our residents to provide tailored care and support, ensuring dignity and choice in every aspect of daily life." Barchester's commercial director, Simon McCall, said, "Shawford Springs is going to be a wonderful home. Julie and her team here will offer personalised care for the people of Otterbourne and the surrounding areas in this lovely setting. We're thrilled to add Shawford Springs to our Barchester family of quality care homes and hospitals."
Thank you, Heather. Richard.
Archaeology dig planned for medical centre site. More than 30 years ago, an archaeological dig in the centre of Winchester captured the public imagination. The excavation on the site of the Brook Centre in 1987-89 drew thousands of people to see the work that peeled back the layers on medieval, Saxon and Roman history. Initial plans for Silver Hills, also known as Central Winchester Regeneration, sparked controversy by only proposing limited archaeology with four slit trench excavations on the bus station's site. Now the City Council has changed its mind and is planning a dig on part of the Friarsgate Medical Centre site, as well as a more varied use on the rest of the area. The unused centre is proposed for demolition this year, with the initial plan to create a new temporary park with seating and planting to be open for several years before the site is redeveloped. Yesterday's Cabinet Regeneration Committee heard that an archaeological dig would now be carried out at the junction of Friarsgate and the back entrance to the bus station. Council critics have called for a major archaeological dig because of the city's rich history over 2,000 years. They've included Professor Martin Biddle, the director of the Winchester Research Unit. The archaeological work on the site is due to start this year and potentially run into 2025, the committee heard. Elsewhere on the site, the council is proposing a park, but with other uses including improved access to the river and a site for mobile exhibitions. The Friarsgate building is due for demolition in the autumn, before any bats return to roost. It would be illegal to disturb their roosting. Ms. Lyons said that the multi-use will also deter vandalism and antisocial behaviour. Councillor Martin Todd, council leader, said that work would give momentum to the whole Silver Hill redevelopment. "We need to get the old medical centre building down. What is now proposed is a better, more interesting use of the site and gives a sense of forward movement, which is very important."
Thank you, Richard. Deborah?
The MOD plans for barracks. The Ministry of Defence has stated it is pressing on with its development plans for barracks near Winchester. Its Defence Infrastructure Organisation, or DIO, has been drawing up proposals for Sir John Moore Barracks at Flowerdown, which is scheduled to close in 2026. Senior Councillor Caroline Horrell had suggested at a recent council meeting that the DIO will pull out of the redevelopment. Proposals have included 900 houses, a business park, park and ride site, as well as retaining much of the site near Littleton as a nature reserve. Councillor Horrill, leader of the Conservative group on the City Council, said there was no clear plan for the site and it appeared becalmed. But in a statement, the DIO told the Chronicle, DIO are in the process of confirming the full planning permission for Sir John Moore Barracks with the Winchester City Council. The future programme will include a series of public consultations and workshops, which will be announced shortly. We are working with the local community in the coming months and to start this programme of engagements to prepare a new master plan for this important site. The barracks opened in 1986, following the closure of Peninsula Barracks in Winchester City Centre in 1985.
Thank you, Deborah. My piece is headed Big Revamp for Landmark Site. Winchester Civic Chiefs have approved expenditure for reviving the deteriorating King's Walk building. They are spending £385,000 on sprucing up the City Council-owned building as a meanwhile use before it is swept away in the Silver Hill scheme. Before then, the building will be made more attractive to visitors and shop tenants. Council leader Martin Todd said, "It's about making sure King's Walk continues to thrive, or thrives even more, ahead of its redevelopment. The building is close to not being fit for purpose in its current state and not adequate for the next few years." Under the surfacing plans for the Silver Hill redevelopment, King's Walk is likely to be in the latter phase, meaning it will remain for several years. A sum of £84,000 has already been set aside, and on Thursday the Cabinet Regeneration Committee agreed to earmark £301,000 for the scheme. Work will include new lighting, a courtyard garden outside the Nutshell, and better signing from the High Street. With rising costs due to inflation, a couple of ideas have had to be dropped. The former post office unloading bay in Tanner Street was earmarked as an outdoor performance space, and the rooftop of Middlebrook Street offices was going to be brought back into use with its striking views across the city. Verian Lyons, head of programme for Central Winchester Regeneration, said the work already carried out had proved popular. "The tenants really like it, the atmosphere has changed, antisocial behaviour around King's Walk is no longer an issue. It was a real issue before, but now there is a reduced risk of vandalism." Councillor Paula Ferguson said, "I'm excited to see the continued improvement of King's Walk. That part of Winchester used to be more vibrant when we had the antiques market. People moved to the area more freely. Residents have told us there is nowhere to sit, no benches to rest on for a while. So I welcome the enlivening of the space and making it more usable." The council is helping the tenants set up a website to promote the events at businesses such as South Downs Social and Bespoke Biking, which are looking to hold more evening events. Heather, please.
Funding delayed for Winchester City's new £1 million pitch. Excuse me. Winchester City Football Club's plan for a new pitch has been delayed due to design changes. The club had applied to the City Council to help fund a 3G artificial pitch at its Charters Community Stadium in Abbots Barton. A total of £200,000 of CIL funding has been allocated to the project, and the Football Foundation has agreed, in principle, to provide a grant towards the expected cost of around £1 million. However, a meeting on March the 7th heard that the funds have now been delayed. Councillor Martin Todd, council leader, could not attend the meeting due to the Cabinet meeting on the Central Winchester Regeneration Scheme decision. Steve Lincoln, service lead for community and wellbeing, said, "The council is very supportive of plans from Winchester City Football Club to improve the facilities at the ground, particularly in respect of the increased opportunities it would present for underrepresented groups in sport. However, following recent discussions with the club and its partners, it became apparent that there was some need for some design alterations to ensure the facility is able to support wider community multi-sport activities. And Mr. Lincoln added, "These alterations have resulted in cost changes and means there will be a delay in the decision on funding from the Football Foundation. So it would be premature for the council to make any decisions at this point. We will continue to work with the club and anticipate another report by the end of the year."
Richard.
Trees to go in park transformation. Winchester's unique hillside public park is said to be rejuvenated over the next 5 years. Civic chiefs have drawn up a management plan for St Giles Hill Park, which will reverse years of neglect. Hundreds of trees are set to be chopped down, largely for safety reasons, and the hillside will have a more open feel. Views lost in recent years will return. The Winchester Town Forum on Monday evening heard that the work in 2028 will increase biodiversity, as well as many of the trees as many of the trees have little natural value, will improve public access and see more local people involved. In the longer term, the aim is to boost public knowledge of the heritage of the hill. In the Middle Ages, it was the site of an annual fair, which attracted thousands of people from across Europe. One of the last Saxon nobles who resisted the Norman conquest, Waltheof, was executed on its slope. The town forum heard that a new charity, the Friends of St Giles Hill Park, will do much of the maintenance work. A previous group of volunteers had to cease work after an issue with insurance liability. Many of the trees to be felled are self-seeded ash and are suffering from dieback. Others to be felled will include laurel, sycamore and ivy. The plan is to fell 40 trees this year and remove dead wood from 100 more. Climbing plants will be cut from 220 others. Local resident Mike Biden, who's lived locally since 1986, said the new Friends hope to start work this summer once the registering as a charity was sorted. "We welcome the new management plan and hope the Friends will be able to give the park a better future." The park's decline was highlighted by City Councillor Charles Radcliffe last year. He told the forum he was pleased with the plan. "The park is a jewel in Winchester's crown. Outside London, I can't think of any town in Britain that has a park to rival the views from St Giles' Hill." Councillor Chris Edwards said, "It's a much undervalued area of Winchester that has much to offer. We haven't the money to do everything, but it's a very exciting project."
Thank you, Richard. Deborah?
Council is powerless to halt diversion. Hampshire civic chiefs say they can do nothing to stop the diversion of Andover Road through Kings Barton. The County Council has no legal power to prevent the change, as it has planning permission. The major route is set to be diverted into the new estate once 650 homes are completed. The diversion was included in the approval for the 2000 home estate more than 10 years ago. Campaigners have been attempting to stop the diversion, and a petition last year attracted 3,000 signatures. The Chronicle has recently reported that many new householders on the estate are unaware of the diversion. The current planning approval has only buses from the proposed Northern Park and Ride continuing to use the Andover Road, as well as cyclists, pedestrians and people who live on Andover Road and need access to their homes. Hampshire County Council is discussing detailed design issues with Carla Holmes and its designer to ensure that the highway will be fit for purpose as far as reasonably practicable within the constraints of the approved planning permission. A technical study by WSP Transport Planning Consultants was commissioned by the County Council to inform its Andover Road Corridor strategy and plan. Councillor Jackie Porter said, "If the County Council won't back an alternative scheme, it's not going to happen. residents of Kings Barton deserve to be told what's in the WSP technical study.
Thank you, Deborah. This piece is headed Double Delight After Pool Table Plea. A youth charity in Winchester that made a plea for pool table donations struck double luck. Winchester Street Reach has been overwhelmed with support following its GoFundMe campaign to raise money for a pool table with the aim of making the charity's new base feel like home. The Young Persons Organisation moved into Unit 12 in Winnell before Christmas to have a centre for its work. The team has since been developing the space with furniture, a TV, an Xbox, and now a pool table to make it feel more comfortable. To their surprise, staff received two pool tables as well as more than £600 in donations for the charity. Operations manager Lottie Clist says, "We are ecstatic about the response and support we have received. A big thank you to everyone who donated and the additional offers that came with it. We are especially grateful to Liberty Games, who we sourced the table for Unit 12, as well as an additional one from one of our youth clubs in Mitchelldover. The tables made a huge difference to the spaces and will definitely increase engagement for young people." Winchester Street Reach delivers street-based outreach to young people in Winchester and surrounding areas, as well as centre-based projects and residential trips, with the aim of meeting young people where they're at.
Heather, please.
The short item is headed Bear Cheek as Hen Dog Strikes Again. Bear spelt B-E-A-R. Graffiti artist Hen Dog has returned with a new piece of artwork in Jewellery Street in Winchester. The anonymous artist's latest piece shows a teddy bear sitting upright, holding a sign that reads, "I used to be like you," continuing the themes of the missing teddy. The latest work by Hen Dog can be found next to a postbox just outside the Ark. Hen Dog shared pictures of the artwork on Instagram yesterday with the caption, "Chapter 5, We're Not That Different." This piece is Hen Dog's fifth instalment of a series of teddy bear related art pieces that can be found around the streets of Winchester.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Right, Richard, please.
New fire station is at the ready. Bishop Waltham's new fire station is now complete after 1 year of work. The new facility is on the site of the previous one in Lower Lane. The old fire station was demolished last March, with firefighters operating out of a temporary base at a nearby industrial estate. The new station will provide better working and training facilities for firefighters, plus dedicated facilities for community engagement. On Twitter, Bishop Waltham Fire Station said, "We're back. After a year of construction, we've backed to our original site and into our brand new station. We look forward to welcoming the community after our official opening in a few weeks' time."
Thank you, Richard. Deborah?
Horrifying wait times. Nearly 500 people were left waiting for more than 2 months before receiving cancer treatment at Hampshire hospitals in 2022, according to a study. Research from the House of Commons Library, commissioned by the Liberal Democrats, revealed that 478 people were left waiting for cancer treatment at the Hampshire Hospitals Foundation NHS Trust, HHFT, which covers Andover, Basingstoke, Romsey and Winchester. These figures meant that 31% of people had to wait more than 2 months for treatment to start in 2022. The Trust has not hit the target of 85% of patients receiving a first treatment for cancer within 62 days of an urgent GP referral since 2020. Liberal Democrats in northwest Hampshire have called the new figures horrifying. Nationally, more than 66,000 cancer patients were forced to wait more than 2 months for their first treatment last year after a referral. Commenting on cancer waiting times in North West Hampshire, Lib Dem parliamentary spokesman Luigi Gregori said, "Delays to cancer diagnosis and treatment are incredibly distressing for those with cancer and those who fear they may have it. The Conservative government has its head in the sand over staff shortages and no real plan to fix it. They must get a hand on this crisis so cancer patients get the urgent care they need to give them the best chance of survival and recovery. HHFT has been contacted for a comment."
Thank you, Deborah. Now, last news item is headed Landmark Pub opens after £200,000 facelift. The Willow Tree Pub in Winchester has reopened following a £200,000 refurbishment. The pub, which closed before Christmas, reopened on Friday, March the 3rd under new management, having been taken over by Ian Warren and Jenny Small, who also run the Queen Inn. The refurbishment was funded by owner Green King Pub Partners. Outside, the pub's garden by the River Itchen has been upgraded. The garden now has an all-new patio, covered pergola, alongside updated decking, making it the place to eat and drink outside when the sun is shining. The pub signage, roofing and external decorations have all been updated. Meanwhile, inside the pub has a brand new back bar and toilets, as well as an updated interior and furniture and fittings to create a welcoming and traditional look and feel. Ian and Jenny ran the Queen Inn as managers for more than 8 years before taking on the pub business themselves. With the Willow Tree, they hope to use their local knowledge of Winchester to emulate the same success. The pair said, "We are thrilled to be taking on the Willow Tree. As locals ourselves, we know the Willow Tree for its exceptional pub garden. And when the opportunity came to take on the pub, we just had to grab it. The Willow Tree will provide a similar menu and drinks to the Queen Inn. This will include quality traditional pub food and a large drinks selection featuring cask ales and refreshing drinks to be enjoyed in the pub's excellent garden." Rob Ayling, Business Development Manager for Green King Pub Partners, said, "Having worked closely with Ian and Jenny for a number of years now, I'm delighted for them. In their hands, the Willow Tree has a bright future. They know what the people of Winchester want from a pub and how to deliver it." Well, I'm sorry to say that that's all we have for you this week. But before we go, another reminder that if you have any problems with your recording, the contact number is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. Would you please put the memory stick and the address label in the wallet when you finish with it and return it to us as soon as possible? Well, thanks to all of the support teams for the preparation, dispatch and editing of this edition. And of course, many thanks to our readers, Heather.
Goodbye.
Richard.
Goodbye.
Deborah.
Goodbye.
And from me, Peter. Until next time, goodbye.